My guest this afternoon, Dr. Keith Clifton. He is professor of music history at the CMU School of Music. Welcome, and thanks so much for helping us wish Ludwig van Beethoven happy birthday this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
As a music historian, I would like you to give us your perspective on why Beethoven has made such a big impact on music history, the history of Western classical music, but on music history. He is so iconic.
He certainly is, and that's a big and a fundamental question. I think, you know, Beethoven came of age at a time when the classical era, so the period of Haydn and Mozart, was on the decline, and composers were increasingly looking to become more independent. You know, this is something that Mozart really tried to achieve during his career and was never entirely able to escape from the patronage system, although he made more progress than his friend and colleague Haydn. But Beethoven, really, many consider him to be the first sort of freelance composer, or the first composer who was writing less to please a patron and more for his own muse, his own desire for expression. And so as a result, he really became the template, the model for the independent composer later on. You know, we think of Romantic composers like Brahms and Mendelssohn and Schubert and Schumann. And really, Beethoven was, in many ways, aside from J.S. Bach, the biggest influence on all of those composers.
Why was he such a big influence?
Well, I think it was, you know, it was because of his independence, his willingness to take chances, and his willingness to think outside the box, and also his ability to take the styles and the forms of music that had been established by the previous generation, you know, the sonata, the symphony, the string quartet, and bring them into a new age. And, you know, if we get into discussions of specific pieces, I can talk about some of the ways that he accomplished that. But it really was his ability to, you know, bridge the gap between the music that preceded him and the music that would come after him. He's a very significant figure in bridging those two periods, classicism and romanticism.
And he lived from 1770 to 1827, and by around 1800, he was starting to lose his hearing. And, of course, that had a big influence, too.
That's right. It certainly did. And, you know, the extent to which the hearing loss plays out in his music and is demonstrated in his music is something that scholars continue to argue about and discuss, because, you know, because the sort of hearing aids and assistance that were available in the early 19th century are radically different than what they are now. You know, Beethoven used these what were called ear trumpets that he would actually stick into his ear and would help to amplify sound. He went to a special spa hoping that the waters of the spa would, you know, open up his hearing. And, of course, nothing worked. But I think, you know, it was one of the reasons why we see Beethoven, you know, especially experimenting with a lot of lower bass writing in his piano music and in his symphonies. You know, think of the opening of the finale of the Ninth Symphony, where you have, you know, the cellos and basses play that beautiful Ode to Joy theme. And many scholars think that toward the end of his life, those were some of the only sounds that he could still hear. So it definitely had a profound impact on how he thought about composing, but also had a big impact on how he thought about himself just functioning in the world. You know, he felt extremely isolated from people as a result of not being able to hear. So initially he pretended that he could still hear. He began carrying around these little conversation books where, you know, people would write and he would respond. And some of those still survive. They actually make really fascinating reading.
How do you think the people of his day reacted to him and his music?
I would say it was mixed. He always had his adherents and his fans and his supporters, but there were many people, especially, I would say, after the Fifth Symphony. So after about 1808, 1810, the music of the final period of his career, known as the late period, was often met with a lot of incomprehension. The string quartets that performed his late string quartets were often very puzzled by, you know, the extreme ranges of the writing and all of the sudden changes of dynamic and so forth. They just, you know, people simply weren't used to performing that kind of music. It really stretched the boundaries of not only technically, which his music certainly does, but just in terms of what people were used to hearing. And so that meant that he, for all the people who admired his music, he had a lot of others who were not fans of his music, who felt that he was writing, you know, music that was way too far ahead of its time and in some cases was unlistenable.
Yes, and I've read that musicians at the time even thought that his music was just too difficult to play or sing.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So
some still do.
But he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew that his music was new and different, and he wanted to make that big impact, didn't he?
That's exactly right. Yeah. He, again, Beethoven became the model for the, you know, the 19th and 20th century composers who are thinking about writing music for a later age. They're going beyond their own personal circumstances of I'm writing this piece on this commission for this particular gig into what is my music going to mean after I'm gone. And Beethoven is really the first composer to be treated with that kind of reverence and that kind of putting up on a pedestal. He really was the first to be thought of in those kinds of terms and, you know, to be widely imitated by the composers who came after him.
Well, it turned out that he was right. His music did live on. What is it about his music that makes folks still listen to and still play and still love his music more than 200 years later?
Yeah, I mean, I think first off, because it's just great music. I mean, I think there's something about great music. You know, why do I love the St. John Passion of Bach, or why do I love the Requiem of Mozart? Or there are certain pieces and certain composers that touch us on a very profound level. I think with Beethoven, it's a combination of things. He, you know, for all of the focus on his innovations and so forth, Beethoven was a great writer of melody. I mean, very much like Mozart or Haydn. He was able to write really good tunes. You know, think of the Ode to Joy, that everyone in the world knows that tune. So I think that was part of it. He was a master orchestrator. You know, his ability to create combinations of instruments was really unparalleled. And he was also really good at providing a variety of emotions in his music. The thing I love about Beethoven's music is that even in the slowest movements, there's always a sense of motion with his music. There's always something interesting to listen to. And that's one thing that I love about him. And then I think when you combine that with his personal story, and this is another thing that's a real innovative feature of Beethoven, he was really the first composer, I would say, where people started to try to discern aspects of his personal life in his music. You know, was this piece, was the Eroica really about the French Revolution? Was the Ninth Symphony really about the idea of freedom and universal brotherhood? I mean, we kind of take these things for granted. But Beethoven was really the first composer to start writing music that people wanted to have those kinds of interpretations about. And that, you know, that was very, very influential on later generations. Think of Tchaikovsky. You know, people love to impose on Tchaikovsky's music aspects of his personal life. And Beethoven was really, really the first to have that happen.
And that's what you as a music historian could spend a lifetime looking into.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What are some of your favorite Beethoven tunes?
Well, I mean, there are so many.
Yes.
You know, but I think I narrow it down, if I have to narrow it down, to a couple of favorite pieces in each genre or in certain genres. So everyone knows the piano sonatas. Those are very famous pieces and might assume that it would be the Pathétique or the Moonlight or the Les Adieux or something. Actually, one of my favorite is one of his final piano sonatas, Opus 106. It's known as the Hammerklavier, which was just the German term for piano in that time. And it's a piece that really taxes the abilities of the pianist beyond, I think, any piano piece that had been written up prior to Franz Liszt or some of the really, really great virtual pianists of the 19th century. It's a massive composition, about 45 minutes of music, but and it's technically spectacular. But the thing that I love about that piece, my favorite of that piece, is actually the slow movement. So the general key of the work is B flat major. The slow movement is in F sharp minor, which by the standards of this time is an extremely distant key, highly unusual key. And there's just a sense of melancholy and profundity about that piece that I just find deeply moving.
And let's note here that Beethoven himself was a virtuoso pianist, although maybe by that time his skills had diminished because of his hearing loss.
Yeah, that's right. He was one of the finest pianists of his time, and was always asking his piano makers, or the piano makers of the era, to, you know, provide him better instruments with wider range and so forth. And, you know, and a lot of scholars have commented that Beethoven was really one of the seminal figures in moving the piano from the pianoforte 18th century Mozart style, which, you know, had a much smaller range, only about 5 octaves and so forth, into the modern piano that we have now. Beethoven was really, really fundamental in that development.
And what about a couple of other favorites?
So as far as concertos go, I love all the Beethoven concertos. I'm especially fond of the fifth piano concerto, known as the Emperor Concerto. But probably my favorite of all of Beethoven's concertos happens to be the violin concerto, the D major violin concerto from 1806. I love this piece. It's so famous that people often, you know, forget, again, how beautifully crafted the piece is. And I love the last movement, the rondo movement, which is a very lively conclusion to the concerto, and, you know, draws on the rondos of Mozart and Haydn, but I think is quite a bit longer and goes, you know, into some very interesting harmonic excursions. And I think it also shows that Beethoven, for all of his profundity and darkness and seriousness that you find in his music, he could also really enjoy himself and write music of tremendous fun. And I think that piece is a good example.
Yes, definitely Beethoven had a sense of humor. You can hear that on a lot of his music.
Yes, you certainly can. You definitely can. You know, as far as the symphonies are concerned, the Fifth Symphony, of course, is the most famous symphonic work written by any composer in history. The Eroica Symphony is incredibly significant historically. The Ninth Symphony is very significant historically because it's the first symphony to include solo voices and chorus. The Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral Symphony, is really the beginning of what we now call program music. But my personal favorite of the Beethoven symphonies is Symphony No. 7, so A major, Opus 92. This is written at a time of great personal turmoil for Beethoven. He was in the middle of a custody fight for his nephew Carl and so on. But what I find so remarkable about that piece is, again, how joyful it is. And it's often referred to as Beethoven's dance symphony, meaning that the work is filled with dance elements to it. And the very famous slow movement, which many people know that movement, which is in A minor, is very much like a sarabande. It's actually reminds me quite a bit of certain slow movements of Bach and Handel, which I find just extremely effective. And then the finale is also, you know, has elements of marches in it. And so I think in some ways it's Beethoven's most diverse symphony. I know that some would disagree with me about that, say, well, no, the Ninth and so forth. But I really do think that the Seventh, in just in terms of orchestration and in terms of orchestral colors and in terms of variety, I think that is his most fascinating symphony. At least it is for me. And it's one that I never tire of listening to that symphony. Every time I hear it, I find something new.
And we will hear it soon here on WCMU. Dr. Keith Clifton, professor of music history at the CMU School of Music, thank you so much for all of your insight today. Now, the sort of unofficial official birthday of Beethoven is December 16th. We know that he was baptized on the 17th, so, you know, probably the 16th, but we don't know for sure, right? But
that's
the date that we will celebrate the birthday. How will you be celebrating on the 16th?
Well, I will probably be, you know, listening to some of these pieces. You know, there's some wonderful documentary footage about Beethoven, some great documentaries. There's also a really interesting film about his life called Immortal Beloved with Gary Oldman playing Beethoven. Again, that film has been roundly and correctly criticized for its lack of historical accuracy, which is true. But I do think there are parts of that film that, you know, depict Beethoven's torment and Beethoven's successes and Beethoven's relationships with others that I think are actually very strong and very much supported by the historical record. So I think I may just watch that film again. It's really a delightful movie.
That sounds good. Keith Clifton, thanks again for helping us out and helping us to wish Ludwig von Beethoven a happy 250th birthday.
Happy birthday to Beethoven. Thank you again for having me.